because we spoke about it.
Yeah. Thursday. Yeah. Cool.
Days are blurring, honestly.
Way of a lockdown, mate. Way of lockdown. Hello, welcome to the Photo Show. Yep, we're here to talk all things photo like we do every week. And again, backed by popular demand, we've got the panel show because this week three people have written and said they really enjoyed it instead of me crapping on constantly. And I've also got someone else to help avoid me crapping on constantly come in and join the panel as well as. Joining me, absolutely brilliant bunch. The guys from Normal, so Damo's here from Solihull, Martin's here from Hertfordshire, and our landscape photographer specialist down in the corner in Cornwall is here as well. But we've also got Paul Painter here, who's a Birmingham-based portrait photographer I've known for a couple of years. And he's a fine, fine photographer. And trying to do movie-style, fashion magazine.
Yeah, magazine-style portraits, yeah.
Yeah, there we go. So that's it. We're off and running with the panel, and it should be fun. One comment that came through from last week's show is from Craig. He's put, listening to your podcast this week and the copyright discussion about Instagram, surely your point about people signing photographs would help with such an issue with Instagram. If you've signed the image, then it deters them from using, and it also shows that they've altered the image, which would help your claim. Or am I missing something? You're missing something because if you look at the license for Instagram, Craig, it tells you that they can alter the image however they so choose, and it's still theirs. So if you basically post anything online, mate, it's gone. Simple as that. Flickr gives you a, what's the word that Flickr use? Is it a rights reserved license?
You can use Creative Commons with Flickr.
Yeah, but you can also reserve rights on it. They don't assume it's automatically theirs like Instagram and Facebook do, I think. So.
And that's why they're losing money, you see. That's why Flickr probably will change.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, Flickr's Yahoo owned, isn't it? So there we go.
No, but it's owned by another company. I forgot the name of the company.
Oh, they sold it?
They've sold it, yes.
Oh, right. We'll Google that one while you lot are talking. Right, so Damo, you had the big question that's going to be this week's show, effectively. Fire off.
Right, well, it was when you were talking to Patrick and you were saying to him, he had, what, $4,000 to spend, and he wanted to buy the best camera. And you said, no, invest all your money on the lights. And I it sort of stuck in my mind, and I thought about it. And now I've got a bit of money to sort of spend on stuff. And I like the iPhone. The iPhone Pro does some nice pictures for everyday work. And I had a little Sony that I used for doing for street photography and putting in my rucksack to use. And then I've got a Canon 5D that I use for landscape and various things. But I don't have a lot of lights at home. And is when you said that about buying lights, I wondered, where would I start as an amateur buying some lights so I could take some pictures of the family and do some nice pictures? Because I quite like taking group pictures of the family during the year and doing the grandchildren and setting up things like that. It wouldn't be for commercial use or stuff like that. But it started making me think. So I've held back on buying a camera, and I've found that the iPhone does most of the stuff. But it was about the lights. What would you recommend to buy if you're starting up as a serious amateur to buy some lights so you could do basically stuff for the family and things like that?
So what's the camera that you're currently using then?
It would be the Canon 5D.
Right, so that's more than enough camera, I would have said. Yeah. I don't know what Paul thinks, but I mean, I'm shooting it with a 5D Mark III, and that's, I'm never going to go higher than that, probably.
Which one is it? Is it just the original 5D, or is it?
I've got the 5D Mark IV. I've got the Mark IV.
Jesus.
Yeah. And I quite like it.
And you want a better camera?
It's fantastic. But it's not something you can put in. It was something like I wanted something to walk around town with. It's not something you take out every so often around town. But now the iPhone does all that for me. And yeah. I quite like that. So now the grown-up camera doesn't come out very much, except for if I want to do sort of some wildlife stuff or stuff, landscape stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that's, yeah, you don't ever need another camera.
Thanks, Paul. You'll come again because you've just agreed with everything I've ever said. So,
I mean, you know, you're only talking, it's very fine margins of better now. It's like, you know, it's it's like the sort of the Top Gear question of, you know, is the Ferrari whatever better than the Lamborghini whatever, you know, it's kind of, it doesn't, you're not talking about is it any good, because it's already fantastic. It's just how much better can it be, and most people will never notice the difference. And that's, so in terms of the camera itself, I think, you know, and I understand what you said about you know, something to carry around town, and I like the iPhone. I use iPhones quite a lot for around town. I do have a small is it a Fuji X100, you know, but I bought that.
Dan has got another question for you then, mate.
Right.
He's got an obsession with understanding why people like Fuji cameras, because he doesn't.
Yeah, right.
That's an off-duke one, yeah.
Okay, but I bought that for as a carry round, and I bought that in 2012. I still use it today, and I still absolutely love it, despite its massive shortcomings. It's still my favourite camera of everything I own. You know, and I use Canon 5DS regularly as my commercial client camera because of just the resolution and the things. You know, I just think it's the most incredible thing I've used. And but the X100 is the one that goes in the pocket when I go just out with the family, for example.
So I think the thing is as well to mention is, if there's people listening to this who've got $4,000, $5,000 burning a hole in their pocket and they're thinking about a new camera anyway, even if you've got, I mean, I've still got a 550D that the kids shoot with, and the images out of it are just fine. As long as you don't get above 800 ISO, they're okay. If you're in the Nikon range, the D300 shoots just fine. There's nothing wrong with that at all. And I think people don't really think about what, I mean, you and I've had this conversation, Ian, as well, and you've got a view on it, I know. If you've got a £500 DSLR or mirrorless SLR, then there's probably not an awful lot that's worth buying that where you'll get a significant change without paying significant money. There's no point in a two-step upgrade. You're probably talking about going to a pro level.
Yeah. You've often said that money spent on lenses is a better way, rather than trying to upgrade the body that you're using.
Yeah, definitely. Ian, go on.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, I'm doing this project with my daughter every week, you know, this portrait. And when you start introducing light, you know, quality light, you know, if I take your old 1DS Mark II, which is what, 2003, 2004, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, if I take a portrait image with that at FA ISO 100, that image is as good as my 5D Mark III.
Yeah, that was an 8 grand camera. Know,
and the technology. Yeah, but in terms of technology, the technology is relatively old. So, but when you start introducing quality light, it's the lighting that's making the difference, not the 5D Mark III.
Yeah,
I
agree.
I mean, I've got several cameras. I've still got a D100, which is a little tiny DSLR that... I think it takes the ES lenses, and I used that purely for video because it was small. It went on my boom, and it was small and light. It worked an absolute treat. The stills on it aren't as good. I would say that if you got that as a stills camera, yeah, you could probably do an awful lot better for a few quid more. But in terms of video, the 1080 video that it shot was absolutely crystal clear. It was gorgeous. So, Damo, I think, if you're saying that you want another camera, I've got to say, you could say that you could justify a second camera if you wanted to go and do some sports photography. So you wanted long lens, short lens, that kind of stuff. But you don't need a different camera, definitely.
No, I'm not. I mean, I suppose you, as an amateur, you get sucked into the advertising and you read the magazines, and the magazines push the stuff, like the Fuji gets pushed a lot, and you see Fuji pictures and you think the colour looks a little bit different. But is that all just in my mind?
No, so that each camera will have its own color gamut.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is Fuji heavier on the greens? Is it biased towards the greens? Canon goes a little bit more yellow.
Yeah.
And I couldn't care less about Nikon, so I don't know the answer to that bit. I'm going to get letters. we don't have any Nikon listeners because of this. The color gamuts do change. And the thing is as well, we were talking about practice. If you get a new lens, I regularly, if I've got a brand new lens, I will stick stuff in, like stick some knives in the top of the balustrade, and I'll look at how it goes through the focal length, changes and how it'll do with ISO changes and that kind of stuff. Because each lens has got its own little idiosyncrasies. So, yeah, there's definitely changes to be made with that.
So what would you buy for lighting then? What sort of setup would you do for a basic lighting studio? If you're a keen amateur, as I say, and I'm doing it, because I just love the grandchildren. I love taking pictures of them, and I'd like to sort of set up a little studio for them.
Yeah. Shall I go?
Yeah, you go for it.
Yeah, fine. What I would say is, I mean, the things that I've been hugely impressed by, I've used all sorts of lighting gear from sort of Bowens, Alinchrom, Profoto gear, and having used a lot of the Pixapro stuff, I think it's a rebranded Godox. Is that how you say it? I'm not sure. Yeah. Their stuff is exceptional. It's really, really good. And I hate to say it, but it really is good. And they've got some very innovative systems as well. And I think, what's it called? There's a Pika 200 or something like that. It looks, it's like the size of a, slightly bigger than a normal flash gun. But you can do all sorts of things with it. There's so many different attachments, and it packs into a sort of a 12-inch by 12-inch box, you know. In fact, I think you can get a couple of them in one of those boxes and take them around, and they're really not expensive, you know. But again, you can go up from there. There's I can't remember what they're called. There's a one that's puts out is at 400 watts, and that is more than you would ever really need in a studio, really, you know, for most work, you know. I mean, there's always going to be, well, what if you wanted to do,
yeah,
you know, like a flicking hair shot and freeze the hair? Well, you know, depends how good you want it, you know. But you'd still be able to do that shot, it, you know. But is it worth another £10,000 of lighting gear to have it absolutely perfect? I'm not sure that's where you are. So, you know, the 400 watt.
So Pixapro,
yeah. I can't. You know who sells them, Ewan? I think, is it Essential Photo or something like that? I think. I can't remember. No. Something like that.
I've got some Godox. So at the studio, the ones that I use in the white room to just flood the backlight, they were dirt cheap 400 watt Godox heads, and they're actually beautiful and rock solid. There is nothing wrong with them whatsoever. Godox do a nice little thing that fits on top of your camera as well when you want to do off flash, which are remote triggers, and that links with their heads. Did you say you got a Neo as well?
Yeah, I bought myself. That's the only thing I've got, really, is a Neo. I bought that, and I found that I bought it because there was just a good review about it, and I found it very useful. It's a really good light.
Well, the Neo 2 will do
the second one of those.
The Neo 2 will do 8,000 strobes a second.
Yes.
So if you can crank up, if you can get enough light out of it, that's the only problem. But if you can crank your camera up to shoot 1/8th of a second or 1/4th of a second, this little Godox head at the top will actually auto link to a Neo and allow you to shoot at that rate, so you'll get 4,000 flashes for every one of your frames.
Because Ian's been doing a very good series on his daughter, and I've been looking at those and thinking of ideas for my own grandchildren to sort of think of, and I'm not quite sure what he's doing on his setup, but he's got,
I'd say there's some good advice with Ian, because I know that your daughter's quite a difficult muse, isn't she, mate? And I was going to suggest how sure you are that you're going to get your grandchildren to sit still long enough, Connie.
Well, yeah.
Bribery. That always works.
Mine's done on the cheap, really.
Yeah, but you've got good effective lighting setups. You've got two simple flash heads that you gel well, and that you use close to the background to give halos and that kind of thing. So actually you get very good effects with very low quantities of light.
Yeah, I mean, I'm using speed lights, the Yongnuo transmitters, receivers, which are about 20 quid.
Yeah.
And then a speed light softbox on the light stand. I mean, you could, with a Yongnuo flash, a Yongnuo trigger, a light stand, you could probably do it for 100 quid, and you get a pretty decent light for that. You know, it depends on, you know, how much you want to get into it, and how much money you've got to spend.
Have you posted any of your daughter up on the website? I'm just trying to find the website now.
Instagram.
Yeah, so you've got a couple here. Do you mind me showing them, or?
No, it's fine.
Okay. So there's one here that's I guess is fairly recent, and that one that was in the house, I guess, or
yeah, up against the lounge wall.
Yeah, so just two flashes again, one behind for a halo, and then one in the front.
I know. I think there might have just been one light. I can't remember.
Oh,
now,
really?
That's been a couple of years ago, I think, that one.
Because you haven't got heavy shadowing to the left side of her.
No.
So you don't have to spend an awful lot of money. I think the thing you've got to think of is what do you want to do with it? So if you bought a continuous lighting kit, you might get more benefit out of that with a set of unsettled grandchildren who might run in and out of your studio setup. Certainly, shooting something where you can trigger off camera, so the last thing you want to be is tied by a cord to your lighting setup, because that really is going to limit you, especially with children. That could become a real pain in the arse really quickly.
Using the trigger systems is invaluable, and you'll really appreciate spending that little bit extra getting the triggers and using them, you know. I mean, you can do this all through, as you say, like Ian said, with speed lights, you know. The only reason I was recommending Pixar Pro is that actually in many cases they're a bit cheaper than going, with a branded speed light, you know. Obviously, you could go unbranded speed lights and find things out there and just to play with it, you know. But that's the route I would go. And I think definitely if you've got that sort of money, if you really want to improve your photography, the look of it, then once you start taking control of the light, rather than just taking what you get, do you know what I mean? That's when you take a massive step forward, you know, as you begin to understand that. And one of the things I would say is when you start using lights is that often one of the mistakes I see a lot of people make is that they sort of get two or three or four lights and they think, I've got to use all of them and I've got to understand how it all work together. Don't do that. Start with one, you know, put it to the subject's left side, put it to the right side, move it closer, move it further away, just like you would with, when you're first starting out as a photographer, you know, you start with one focal length, that's what I would always recommend, and you figure out what does that look like and where, if I move to the left, to the right, up, down, what happens, you know? And it's the same with light, is just try, you know, and see where it, you know, what happens, you know, if when you move it further away, what happens when you put a softbox on, you know,
Wait for lighting attachments there again, which is another time, another bit of expenditure for you. But,
If you don't want to spend, you know, money on a softbox, for example, you know, order from, I think it's like an IKEA or a sort of a plain white sheet, you know, okay, it's not going to be as good as a dedicated softbox, but it will soften the light as it hits them, you know, and you just put that in front of the flash and then you can experiment with, if I move that closer, if I move it further away, if I move the light further away or move it closer, all these things you get to play with, you know, and it changes the look.
We've had a few weeks of messing around with macro stuff because we were stuck in the house. So we'd set a few little macro challenges in the Slack room. And one of the things that Ian used was just a bit of foam board to act as a bounce rather than giving direct light. I diffused... when I was doing the bubble stuff, I diffused mine using just a piece of A4 paper trapped between two books. There's a whole pile of stuff that you can do with light. The thing about light is understanding inverse square law. So you move it further away, double distance, quarter energy, and that'll help you get lighting softer or harder. And then also then thinking about how you can diffuse it. And there's a million and one things you can stick between the light and the subject and change what it looks like. You know, a bit of greaseproof paper will do a bit less than, a bit more than, rather than an A4 piece of paper, which will do less with the greaseproof, more with the A4. There's tons of stuff. Put coloured gels in, sweet papers in front of it to change colour and stuff like that. There's loads and loads of things you can do with light once you've got it to then start messing around with it. Do you want to shoot video as well as an option, or are you just thinking stills, demo?
Just stills, really. I quite like stills. I quite like taking these sort of pictures. I'm fascinated of families through the ages. So I've got a series of about 6-7 years of the family at Christmas and at summertime, and watching how things go from there, and taking pictures on the birthday and watching them through. So I quite enjoy that side. I enjoy taking pictures of people. I do a blog at work, and I'm always got my camera out just taking candid snaps of people. I'm not afraid of taking pictures of people, and I quite enjoy looking back at them. But it's just doing a little bit more formally, because I'm looking at some pictures we paid for when we were when they were quite young, and then seeing if I can do it a bit more formally. It's just out of my own enjoyment, really.
Yeah. So the other thing is to think about as well, Damo, is if you're going to go with start off with some flashes to go off camera, as Paul and Ian have said, you know, that remote trigger stuff is going to be really beneficial to you. Okay. But you can get a lot of small, and I'm going to show you some stuff here that's on the WEX website, and we're not sponsored by them or anything. But there is an awful lot of attachments to go on basic speed lights, and they'll fit the Yuong just as much as they'll fit the Canon stuff. But you can get little soft boxes for that. You can get big soft boxes that will fit on. You'll get Bowens adapters, so you can then get full-blown soft boxes that are gridded that take a Bowens fit, and then you can put them onto your speed light because that's been clamped into this adapter. And eBay is probably one of the best places to get some of those things. But to get a cheap set of stuff, and haven't you got the bowl that goes on the top of your speed light? Didn't you show me that the other week? You've got like a kit with a scoop as well that goes on it.
Yes.
Yeah, that kind of stuff is brilliant. Thinking about bouncing light, changing light's direction where it comes in from, to soften it, so double the distance, quarter the energy again.
Yeah. I just did a very quick search as well on, because it's Canon, isn't it, that you use? Is that right?
Yeah. Canon,
yeah. On a secondhand website for equipment, and, you know, there are dozens of Canon specific flashlights being sold for less than £100. You know, I mean, yeah. You know, if you've got the sort of money we were talking about to spend,
I'm going to have a little look, serious look, you see.
Yeah.
Because Ewan teases me, I'm not a YouTube addict for learning. I find it very difficult. I like reading the magazines. And
right.
then I told Ewan that I then started dipping into the YouTube stuff, and I got very confused. And then I went back onto WEX, but then WEX didn't have very much about telling you about lighting at all, if you look on the WEX
website. Yeah.
Did you let us have that link, Paul?
Sorry?
Could you let us have that link, Paul, to the site that you mentioned?
Yeah, the site. I wasn't sure what we could say or not.
It's not a problem.
Yeah, the secondhand site that I would recommend is a site called mpb.com. They sell, it's all verified, it's all checked. You get a warranty with them. Apparently, I don't earn commission from them. Wish I did. But I've bought stuff from there, and I use it day in, day out, and it's fantastic because it's all checked. You know, and also, if you've got any spare gear, you can sell it through them as well. I've actually sold a couple of cameras that I no longer needed, you know, through them as well. So they're very good. If you go on there, I just literally clicked on Flash Guns Canon, and I'm actually quite surprised how many there are and the prices of them, you know.
That's always the worry about buying secondhand photography equipment on thing. You don't know, you know, what you're getting, basically.
Yeah.
But a lot of them will give a warranty. So WEX, for example, will give you a one-year warranty with all of the secondhand stuff that they sell. And there's a lot of places that will give you 6 months pretty comfortably as well. That was a bit spooky where Harry came out of the bubble there and back in again. Can't lie. The other thing I think of, Damo, is actually, if you're talking about shooting with the family, you're going to be in the house and you probably haven't got a massive space that you need to fill with light anyway. A couple of speed lights with a couple of softbox attachments and things like that would probably be a great start point. Get yourself a couple of stands as well so that you can fix these up. And you don't want a flexible stand. I think you should buy a solid stand that's got a 3/8 fit on the top, and then just screw that straight into it and just move those around it easily. But definitely, definitely, definitely do not tie yourself down with a cable with flash, ever.
No.
Yeah.
That's very useful.
Amazon Basics is, I've got a couple of light stands that are Amazon Basics. And pretty good.
The Amazon Basics stuff's really good. Guy that used to work for me, Jake, he bought the Amazon Basics DSLR case. And I was like, well, yeah, okay, mate, but you're only spending $29.99 on that. You know, just, you got to get what you get. It was frigging amazing. It was a brilliantly laid out bag. It was better than some of the more expensive. I've got a nasty habit of buying bags.
All photographers have a nasty habit of buying bags.
I got a Bellingham this year, which was like my treat for myself. It was like, I'm gonna get a Bellingham. I've put off getting a Bellingham for too long, and I've got one. And I don't even use it for camera equipment. I put my laptop in it. So.
Well, I've got one of those Amazon Basic bags, and brilliant, absolutely brilliant. It sorted all my stuff out. The trouble is, I put too much in it, and I can't lift the bloody thing. Too heavy.
Yeah, as long as you watch for the straps and make sure you aren't tearing those slowly over the time, then they work really
well. I did this morning. It was a beautiful morning, mist in the park, and I was going to go down to the canal, and I'm basically not going to go on the towpath because I know the social distancing, you can't do that on the towpath. And I went out there, and you know what? I hadn't put a bloody film card on the camera. The whole stuff over there without any film.
I'm not going to lie, mate. I turned up for a job at London Underground, and I hadn't put any SD cards in the bag. I'd taken them out to put them in the video bag, and I made up a stills bag because that's all I was doing that day. And I ended up having to go over to a store on the opposite side of Victoria, and they said, we got no SD cards. We got micro SD cards. Okay, so how much was the cheapest micro SD card you got? And it was like 20 quid for an 8 gig. I said, okay, I'll buy that, and I'll just see if it actually works in the camera. And it did, so I bought the 64 gig one. And that saw me through for the day, but I was a crack, because I would never have shot video with that. It just wouldn't have been fast enough.
Sort of sports day with no card.
And there's not a lot of shops around the sports field.
No.
And I've learned that lesson. I do try. That's the problem with having too many camera bags, is you swap from one bag to another. So now I do try and keep cards in each bag.
Yeah. I have an emergency card that stays in each bag I use, and it never gets used. It's just purely there as a backup.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
I've got some little clicky wallets that are quite nice for holding SD cards, and I tend to keep one of those in bags, and it's got a 2 or 3 256 cards on for video, and then a couple of 32 gig stills cards.
Yeah.
But I still get caught out, mate. I'm still, like, 11th hour, you're, like, at the end of the street, and you're like, hang on, and you pull over and open the boot and just have a look through your equipment at 5 o'clock in the morning, make sure you've still got it. I've never turned up without a camera. I've heard of photographers who turned up without cameras in the past. I've not done that one yet.
No. I'm glad you've admitted to pulling over and checking, because I do that almost every time I leave. Did I put the cards in? Top of the street, pull over, check. Yeah, right.
I've had ones where I've pulled over on the M42, and this was a section of the M42 that wasn't lit when I was going north. And I've pulled over on the side, and I've got lorries whizzing past me. The lane is narrow, super, super narrow, and I'm stood there with my iPhone with the flashlight on, looking through the bays because there's no light in the boot. And you're just like, I'm going to die. I'm going to freaking die. Yeah, but I'm not turning up without. I might die, but I'm not turning up without a card.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, mate, we've bonded finally.
There we go.
Paul, can I ask another lighting question?
Yes.
That's why he's here.
What's three-point lighting? What do they mean by that?
Okay. It's a technique that you use where it is kind of what it says on the tin to an extent, in that you've got three lights. And I mean, when I say three lights, that doesn't necessarily mean you have three flash guns, okay? Because you've got the sun, that could be one. You could put a reflector, that's two. And then you have another light behind, that's three, for example. So three light sources, okay? So what you would, the general idea of it is that, you have one either side, so you've got, say for example, one powered hitting your right hand side. You've got another one hitting your left hand side, and usually it's one coming either above onto the top of the head or slightly behind, just to create, you know, that kind of thing. That's how a lot of people would see it. The thing you have to be careful of with a three-point lighting system is that what you have to bear in mind is that humans are used to seeing things with one light source, i.e. the sun. Okay, that's how we're programmed. So if you've got an equal amount of light hitting both sides of the face, that can actually create a sort of, I can't think of the right word.
We've had this conversation on Thursday, haven't we? People around, they're cylinders, so you've got to make them look like a cylinder. You can't have a flat face.
Yeah. So what you want to do is, I mean, there are various ways of doing this. So, for example, if you've got a light coming, hitting your right-hand side of your face, but it's very difficult. You can't put anything here on this side to bounce any light back in, for example, like a poly board or a white wall or something. So you'd put another flash gun on the left-hand side, but it would be very much turned down, you know, sort of probably be two-thirds less power just to give a little fill of the shadows. So, you know, you've got well-lit, you've got shadows, but it's not completely black. Do you know what I mean? So you can see some detail in it, but that's where you get that lovely gradation across the face. And that's the 3 points. And again, the light above, you know, you see those beautiful portraits where the hair looks like it just looks like there's a bit more
radiant.
Yeah. Oomph behind it.
Yeah.
That's how I understand 3-point lighting. I mean, the funny thing is with it, I mean, again, there's all sorts of ways of using light. Like, for example, I was just looking at Ian's, some of the portraits on your Instagram. You know, it's that, you know, if you like the background with one, you know, and then, so for example, you're creating these little halos around people, you know, that's a fantastic way of using light. So you've got one light on the subject, one light on the background, you know, and that light will hit the background, it reflects back at the subject and gives them a little, you know, bit of separation from the background, for example. So there's always, that is how you can use light as well. Again, the big thing is don't be scared of it, just start with one and see what happens. There's so many of the great portraits that have ever been taken, it's just one light, you know. And it's just, it's understanding how that is. It's very easy, and I think it's a real tendency as photographers, we do like to overcomplicate it, and we like to make it really technical. And the thing that I would, you know, I've always tried to do is keep it as simple as possible, because then less goes wrong. Do you know what I mean? If you look at, on that note, if you look at the photographer called Platon, go on his website, have a look. He's the guy who's photographed most of the presidents of the United States the last sort of 30 odd years. I think he's the incumbent photographer at the New Yorker magazine. He's from Greece, but mostly grew up in the UK. And he, for many of his, almost all of his portraits, uses one light. That's it.
I gotta say, I always keep saying it. I'm a great believer in one light for the subject, and I don't mind a second light to highlight the background or to highlight, like you say, lift some shadows occasionally, maybe. But generally speaking, one light for one subject.
Yeah. Unless you've got a really good reason to use a second one, I wouldn't. You know, I really don't. You know, unless I'm trying to create an effect, then I would use one. You know. You and I were talking yesterday, weren't we, about sort of the corporate white background shot, for example. You know, you need the background to go white, you know, and you need to get, therefore, enough light on it to make you know, because white isn't really white, if you know what I mean. It's a kind of, it's usually a grey. And we were talking about numbers of light. Yeah.
We've got a line of T-shirts coming out to reflect this.
We have, haven't we? Yeah. Proper geeky. But, you know, the thing is as well, again, this is where, so you want enough light on the background to make it all absolutely white. Therefore, you don't have to use Photoshop to adjust everything afterwards. But then you don't want that light hitting the background and reflecting back too much into the face, because this is stuff to experiment with, because this is where you have to get this is where you're getting the balance right, is that if you've got too much like hitting a white background and your subject is too close to it, the light will eat into the face. Yeah. So if you see portraits where it's almost white, sort of from here backwards, that's what's happened. It's not light coming from in front of the subject, it's actually coming from behind them. And it's eating into the skin. And that's something, that's a big error. I see a lot, you know, and it's one to avoid. And it's very difficult. That is one of the little tricks where using, I was showing Ewan yesterday, I started using one of these again, a light meter, flash light meter, to, you know, make sure that those numbers are bang on accurate. You know, this is a whole different level of learning to do with lights, so useful, because then I know exactly how much power that light is putting on the back of someone's head, and I can adjust my camera accordingly, or I can adjust the flash to match what I want it to be, you know what I mean, and keep the background white without it eating into the flesh.
That's one thing I found doing the portraits of my daughter. Forget if you need a new camera or what lighting gear you need. You need space. When you start lighting backgrounds and stuff, and you're talking about the light coming back forward, you need to get a bit of distance between the subject and the background. Yeah, yeah. Space is a challenge sometimes.
That's quite a step, Ian, from going from buying a new camera body to buying a house.
Well, yeah, but how committed are you?
What was that picture you just had on this screen?
So that's my white room. And from there, you can see what Paul's saying about just kind of starting to eat into the white on the left-hand side of the guy's face. And that was one of the things that's the hard part in the white room is as soon as you get someone to walk into it, you say, right, stand in here. They want to walk straight to the middle of the room. And you don't want that. You want them as far forwards as possible. You literally want 2 millimeters from their toe to the front edge of the white room, because you want all of that large, heavy light at the back to light all of that up and keep as much away from them as you possibly can. So again, you're then controlling the light on the subject with one light at the front. So then you get that light and shade across it. And the problem I had with this guy, he kept wanting to stand in the middle of the room.
Yeah. I mean, that's another interesting subject, I guess, Paul. I mean, how often would you subtract light? I mean, are you using flags at all? Or how often would that come into your lighting scenarios?
All the time. Because I always, I love to use the shade, the dark and the light. I mean, it's a real balancing act. So very often in a studio environment, I will have black flags either side of the subject to cut any bounce back out at all. So almost the complete opposite to the picture that Ewan just showed there with a white room. I like it to be completely black. And then if I want a white background, I'll put that in just behind them, usually long way back, but then I'll have two panels either side. I think I say panels. This is like polystyrene that's painted black, or it'll be a black curtain, for example. I happen to have.
Got 2x1 frames that are made up in wood that are 6 foot long that are covered in black background material, black backdrop material. Yeah.
So, exactly. I have reflectors that have one white side, one black side. I'll use that if I'm on location and I don't have access to the polystyrene, for example, and that's to get that effect where you see that those shots where you've got like the front of the face is very well lit and then it goes dark very much under the cheekbones and that kind of thing. That's how that is happening. So often you're taking away light where you want it to be. I was really fascinated how Ian's done. I was just looking at the very last shot you posted, which is it your daughter's eyes. Just
Yes. Yeah, that was
fabulous.
What was it? It was like a pizza box, I think. I just cut a small slit in the pizza box, held it on a light stand, shot a speed light through that, and then I did have a soft box to the side of her just to give some hair light.
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah, and that shot is very much. That's exactly how when we're talking about controlling light. That's exactly what I mean, and that's a perfect example of it doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to, you don't have to spend thousands. There we are. Thanks. You don't have to spend thousands of pounds on soft boxes and gear. Like Ian's just said, you cut a hole in some cardboard.
We've done a macro flush out of a Pringles tin this week for doing a lot of that stuff. Just bounce the thing up because they're foil lined anyway, so it's perfect for diffusing the flash as it comes down.
Exactly. So, I think, again, when people start using light, again, the biggest, one of the mistakes I see often is they put way too much light in. Mm. You often need a lot less than you think, it's also why when we were talking initially about the power of the lighting that you can buy, You know, I remember in my early days, I bought a power pack light because we do a lot of outdoor shoots. And I think it has like 1200 watts of power or something like that. It's immense for what I need. You know what I mean? And I don't think I've ever used it. I thought I was going to be trying to get away with things. Never used it at more than about 2/3 of that power ever.
So that's on eBay to buy then, is it?
You don't want it right now. That one needs new batteries now. But actually, I haven't used that light for years, funnily enough. I bought others that were far, far easier to use than that one. It's when lighting on location, you used to have to carry literally things that look like car batteries around with you. Yeah, it's the complete opposite of the discreet, you know, lightweight approach.
I've never done that. I've never done that, no, because all the stuff I do is industrial, so it's like trying to add light to it is just a pain in the arse. I just tend to use off-camera flashes, if that's it.
Yeah,
This was another one shot in my white room, a girl called Hannah. So she, again, separating her, that was. I've got two shields that stop the background lights from coming forwards towards the subject, and she's right at the forward point, just a single light on her.
I was just trying to think of a really good example of... again, you know, I know people like to see where it's done really well and where it's done, you know, it's really highly technical how they've achieved the look. There was a series by the New York Times magazine, I think, about it's called like the Obama portraits or Obama's people is what it's called. And that's worth Googling. And it was shot, really famous photographer, can't remember his name. But he's really...
Oh,
really
that one, good. That famous photographer.
That guy. I'm going to look for it now. I'm trying to think of his name. But it's like, if you Google, I think it's, I presume it's still live, Obama's people. And you can, there used to be, Nadav Kandar, that's the guy. Phenomenal photographer. He did, there are some behind the scenes shots of this sort of lighting system that he had, and again, there's all sorts of techniques for getting light onto the background without it affecting the subject. So if you've got space, you'd hide your lights so there's absolutely no way. So the flash bulb is here, you've got a big panel here, the light's pointing that way at the background, so there's no reflection back from coming from the side of the light towards the subject. And it's where you want to be really, really specific. And you, again, you know, it's like any subject. Once you start diving down the rabbit hole, you can, there's no ending where you can go. But I say, just, if you check out that, just to have a look at them, because they're, that's one of the shots. But there's some that are just stunning. And when you actually look at the pictures, and the way they're lit, when you really go into it, at first you think, oh,
it's got quite a bit of shadow to it at the back.
But that is very deliberate because they're all exactly the same. But when you actually see them live, they just pop like something. But it's a very specific look that he has created using the lighting system that is used. And I think I don't know whether it's on his website or whether it's on the New York Times magazine link, if I'm just having a quick look now, they do actually show some of the behind the scenes of how it looks and it how it's set up, should I say. This is an archive page, so no, you might not be able to find them. Anyway, fascinating. Fascinating. But the other guy to look at, if you're looking for training, especially using speed lights and portraits, is a photographer called Joe McNally. Pulitzer Prize winning, all-round, really nice, top guy. He runs a load of courses and tons of stuff on his website about lighting techniques, specifically using speed lights. It's because he's an ex-journalist photographer. And therefore, that's how he bases a lot of his lighting systems. I mean, of course, he uses big lights too, big studio lights too, but He does a lot of work. Oh, yeah. And he does a lot of training as well. He does a lot of training and in places like Creative Live or, you know, through his own website, that sort of thing. Really nice guy.
So, Paul, what does a portrait, professional portrait photographer do outside professional portrait photography? What do you take photographs of?
What do I take pictures of?
Yes.
My kids, obviously, a lot. A lot of my family snaps, that just like everyone else's family snaps. I mean, you know, I think anyway. I think it's really interesting because when I first started, my camera bag used to go with me everywhere. It didn't matter whether you're going to a museum, we're going to the pub, I always had a camera on me. And I remember my first boss in photography, he turned to me and said, "I'd give that about 2 years before you start leaving that at home." He was wrong. I was about 5 or 6 years before I did, but I did eventually.
I've always taken the camera a lot of places, and the thing that stopped it for me was when I hit iPhone 7.
Yeah.
That was when I really then did stop bothering about taking a camera out with me for the day.
Yeah. But then in 2012, instead of going on holiday, we decided to see if we get tickets to the Olympic Games, because we figured it was the only, probably the only opportunity we'll ever get to go and see anything. So we just applied for all sorts of random stuff, from basketball to handball and this sort of thing. Anyway, we got some tickets. And so I thought, the natural inclination for me was thinking, oh, I'll take my whatever it was, 5D or 1DS or whatever it was. I can't remember the camera I had at that time I was using. And a lens, and maybe I'll take a 70-200, put an extender on it, you know. But then I thought, I'm never going to get close enough to the action to really warrant having that kit with me. And also, I'm going to have to lug it around all day.
And they might take it off you.
Yeah. Well, that was the other thing. So I just thought, do you know what? I started looking around, and I know I alluded to this camera. It's just on my desk over here. So, the X100, that's an original X100, and it occasionally sticks. It doesn't focus very well. But I took that with me, and it has a 35mm angle lens. So the only shot you can take is the wide angle shot, pretty much, And so what I loved about it, and again, when I was just wandering around, we were fantastic friends of ours, gave my eldest son and I some tickets to go and watch the beach volleyball. So we turned up for that. We were right up in the gods watching. But so it's that, the shot you can't take is the fantastic shot of them leaping in the air over the net and smashing it. But what you can do is take in the atmospheric shot. Do you know what I mean? Or you can turn round and photograph the reactions of people in the crowd, And I still love doing that, And the only camera I would ever really do that with is the X100. I wouldn't.
You brought it all the way back to me thinking about buying a Fuji now.
Oh, give over, Danny. So I took all my stuff to England versus New Zealand at Edgbaston, and I knew I could get my stuff in because I'd been there before with it. But actually, one of the best pictures I think I've taken at a sporting event was that one when the winning catch was taken. And it was highlighted and punctuated only by the guy in the top right-hand corner there, who's wearing a mask for, what's his name, who used to be the leader of the Labour Party. And it's...
Corbyn, is it?
No, it's the guy where he beat his brother out of it.
Miliband.
Yeah, David Miliband. That was it.
But
like you say, and the one I've seen of the Ryder Cup, the winning putt going in, and the best shot ever, and it's actually a bloke stood at the high at the back of the stand with just everyone erupting. It's got nothing to do with the putt.
No, not at all. And I think I think the single best piece of advice I've ever been given in photography is, with the kit you have, with the lens you have on, with the camera you have, take the shot that you can with that, not the one that you wanted to take if you'd had X, Y, or Z bit of kit with you. Take the shot that you can with the equipment you have, not, you get the point. And so, you know, if you're, all you've got is wide angle, shoot wide angle stuff, you know. But equally, you know, when we were around, we were walking around, yeah, often it's, you know, I'll just see, you know, I'll be out with family, whatever. I'll see some interesting angles. I'll shoot a lot of stuff with that camera, from portraits to architecture to landscapes, you know. I mean, they're all for me. They're never really used for anything. But, yeah, that's it. Cool.
Fantastic. Yeah. No, that's really good advice.
So, so Paul, one last thing. Sorry.
Yeah, go for it, man.
Okay, I've got a 430 speed light. Okay.
Yeah.
If I'm going to buy a second one, do I buy another speed light, or should I buy a continuous light source?
Again, like Ewan says, it's if you're going to shoot video, then you'll need continuous light. So something like a Neo or something like that would be perfect for that, because then you could also use them for flash, I believe, can't you?
Yeah, the Neo's perfect. The Neo 2 will do strobing, but it's not massively bright. We did one actually, Damo, you were in the chat room the week I reported on it. Yeah. The one from the Philippines that's 550 watts of LED, and it flashes. And you can daisy chain them as well, because they're on, you know, the 1-4. I need to figure out the link for that and find out where it is, but I'll send it to you. But yeah, I mean, if you're going to shoot video, you can't do anything else but continuous light. But you can get fantastic LED panels with some backdrops and some stands that will probably be about 150 watts for about 70 quid.
Yeah.
So that they aren't going to break the bank.
However, if you want to just do stills, then another speed light, you know, because I think now, I can't be 100% certain on this, because Canon may have changed their software, but I don't know. But I think, I'm sure the 430, they do talk to each other, don't they? So if you've got two 430s, they will actually talk to each other. I don't know whether
the young new system
is infrared. I don't know. I can't remember.
Well, the young new system that Ian was talking about, Ian, that's built into the young new flash, isn't it? And a young new flash will cost you about 70 to 80 quid, and it'll be just as good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a standard transmitter receiver, though, so it's not, I can't adjust the power settings on the transmitter.
Right.
I have to manually walk to the flash and go and change it. But,
well, you say, you know,
that's not a big deal for me. Yeah.
But we had this conversation last week where I said, you know, if you want to learn photography, just force yourself to be in manual for the next 3 weeks. And you'll learn pretty quickly. And it's the same thing with your lights. Stick your lights on and physically go out and change. And when you take a shot, go, okay, well, that one's too powerful. So you go down and you take it to 1/64 or something like that and shoot again. It's just, there is no substitute for practice.
Yeah. Exactly what Ewan just said, and Ian. You know, it's with a, you know, I mean, bear in mind as well, you know, if it's not bad to have a flash gun right on top of your camera. Do you know what I mean? You know, you get better looks by taking it off and moving it and using the triggers. But bearing in mind, you know, if you've got one flash gun on top of the camera and you've got another one, they will talk to each other, you know? So again, you could power right down your flash gun on your camera just to give a little bit of front light, just to fill in the shadows a little bit. And, you know, the one that's off to the side, that you use that as the main power source. You know, as the main light source. So there's, you know, if you're thinking, oh, I don't really want to spend another 50 quid on another transmitter or whatever, you can get away with it like that. You know, there are, you know, all sorts of, it's just thinking it through. Do you know what I mean? How it's going to, where it's going to come from. You know?
There's a certain part of it as well. I got caught out badly with this in my head. Ian was showing his little setup, and I was kind of like, that's really cool for home. And I'm sitting here and I'm like, you know, I'm stuck at home. I'll get myself another little Yongnu and a little trigger, and that'll work out just fine. And I thought to myself, I've got a studio down the road that I'm the only person in with probably, I've got eight heads, and it's, you know, four continuous, four flash. And why am I buying something for a home studio that I'm never going to use after this week?
Yeah.
But I was really close on Amazon to clicking buy.
Yeah,
so close.
I was just thinking, if you go, I don't know if you can look on my Instagram account, because I was just going to say that there's one of my boy that I shot while we were
on Instagram. Then let's get my Instagram up.
Yeah, Paul G Painter. If you're after it, you.
Yeah.
The first one of my lad there on his, you know, he's on his Game Boy or whatever they're called, Nintendo Switch, I think. You know, it's one of those where, you know, that's a two light setup. So, you know, you've got one light from the side, from camera right, I guess, coming in. But then there's you know, if you click on the lad there, top left, you know, yeah.
I'm intent on signing in according to that. So
okay, fine. You know, but that's two lights because on if you when you look at the full shot, you'll see there's like a lovely glow on top of his head of a light that's above him. You know, just but again, they're just gently hitting him. You know, but actually, again, thinking about it, that does have there is another light in that shot, which is just making sure that there's enough light hitting the back of the Game Boy, whatever it's called, Nintendo Switch. You know, so I've actually got a third light that's off. You know, there's no modifier on it. It's just hitting my back wall and just coming back at the subject, just to light the whole subject. Just, you know, again, with about a third of the light that I actually need to make it look good, just to fill in little bits of the shadows where I want them to, you know. And again, it, like Ewan just said, and Ian was saying, you know, keep it on manual. Because that way you really learn how that light will work, you know. And when you move light closer or further away, just seeing the effect that has on a subject, you know. On that picture of my lad, the main light lighting him was about 3 inches out of that shot, you know, because what I wanted was the light to hit him really softly. You know, and so the closer a light is to a subject, the softer, the more the shadows kind of blend. They're not so harsh, you know. And now there's a crossover with that, which I'm not going to get into the complicated aspect of why those shadows don't look quite so soft in that particular subject because we had grids on the lights and this sort of thing. But generally speaking, the closer you bring a light, the softer the shadows, and the further away a light goes, the harsher the shadows. And the easiest way to think of it is if you think of the sun and clouds. So on a bright sunny day, the sun is literally a very small spotlight way up in the sky. You get really harsh shadows. On a cloudy day, you know, where the sun's sort of coming through, it's almost like a softbox. You get much softer shadows, you know, but that's because the light is being dispersed much closer to you. Therefore, it's the same principle. It's the same.
Yeah, I love a cloudy day for a wedding.
Yeah,
and the bride and groom don't get. They where's the sun? Ah, oh, don't worry about that. It's nice and
cloudy. Nice big diffuser
box up there.
Absolutely. Makes life so much easier.
Brilliant.
The other thing I'd say about, you know, one thing that I've learned probably the hard way, if you can start introducing, you know, 1, 2, 3 light sources. Providing you've got a patient subject and you've got time, is try do it one light at a time.
Yes.
Introduce one light, see what effect that's having, then introduce the second light. If you start with, say, all three light sources, if something's not right, you're not sure which light's causing the problem.
Well, again, that goes back to what we were talking about with the balance of ISO exposure and shutter is, you know, don't go on auto, don't go on the P setting, because you don't know what those settings are. So put one on that, you know, I know I'm at F2.8, I know I'm at 1/500th of a second, and then mess with the other two. And then at least you know what the outcome is to the change that you made. Otherwise, you just see something different and you don't know why it's different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all very logical. It's all very logical when you break it down.
Two thank yous. First one is to TSO Host. They pick up all the server bandwidth. They give us two massive servers to do the streaming with and the storage of all the crap that we've ever produced back to 2008. Without them, we'd be stuffed. So please make sure you get yourself out on the socials and say thanks at TSO Host for supporting at British Tech. And thanks also to IMN Max, because they give us a load of support. And if you've got anything with an Apple logo on it that's knackered, send it to them and they will fix it. And he's even having a go at a Pixel Book next week, because we'll put it in the washing machine. Just don't ask. No, Paul, don't. Where can we get a hold of you, Damo?
Oh, at DamianWormsley.com or Damo on Twitter or Damo on Instagram.
Excellent, mate. we'll you'll have to get yourself your shopping list together before you buy, and then we'll pass it around and we'll add to it and say yes or no, and then you can take the plunge, mate.
Definitely.
Martin, where will you be?
Well, you can find me at the Old Mug site, or MartinKelly at Mac.com, or Magic Man in the Slack room.
And doing the BTN quiz every Thursday night in our Slack room. So thank you for that, mate. And if you want to join in the quiz, then you've got to do is write to BritishTechNetwork@gmail.com and we'll get you an entry. Ian, where would you be, buddy?
IanLewisPhoto.co.uk. And just a thank you to Paul. I was really glad he came along tonight. Yeah, that was really useful. Very good, we need to get Paul into Slack, I think.
Need to get Paul in the Slack, right? There you go, mate.
Maybe.
And last of all, Paul, where can everyone get hold of you?
Right, okay. I have two Instagram accounts you can look at. My commercial work is on Paul G. Painter, and my portrait work is on Amara Portraits, which is AMARA Portraits.
Thanks for coming along tonight, mate. It's really cool.
Really good. Thank you.
Excellent. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. You can follow me at British Tech as well on the network. We'll be back again next week. Whether we're still in lockdown or not, and whether we still have the panel show or not, I don't know. But if you've got a question, send it to BritishTechNetwork@gmail.com, and I will answer it, or Paul will answer it if he comes back. Don't know if he's going to come back or
I'll come back. But I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Good. There we go. Blimey. You haven't got to listen to me crap on every week and berate you and tell you off and browbeat you into doing what we want. Thanks, Ian. Thanks, man. Yeah. See you all next week. Have a great week. Thanks for listening. Bye.